University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Back at the races. Joined by James Scully, Twin Spires and Brisnet team. And usually at this point, when Scully joins us, we do a Kentucky Derby report visit. But last week was bereft of any action when it came to the young horses. Although there were a couple of notable efforts that really haven't talked about this week, James, and notably Americanus out of that allowance race for Mark Hennig, and the race did not come back that fast. But I'm sure that I'm sure that he's going to get an audition somewhere on the Derby trail or in stakes very soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he did it the right way. You're right. We only gave him a 91% speed rating, so the race came back on the low side. But not an overwhelming crop so far, I think, from a speed rating perspective. So Americanus, he's a Warfront colt out of a mineshaft mare. Definitely, that race was 7 furlongs. Definitely figures to stretch out the 2 turns next time out in a stake race. The other race was at Santa Anita. That maiden race on the undercard had Exalted, who had run second to Nadal, Divine Armor, who had placed against Thousand Words, and I think Honor AP was in there. And they both got upset by a horse, Kiss Today Goodbye, a son of a Cairo Prince for Eric Kruljak. So he rallied to beat Divine Armor by about a head, and Exalted was in position, in upper stretch, and just weakened late to be third.
Well, and you had the Leams map for Todd Pletcher also.
Yeah,
Leams Point, that came back slow too, that race.
That did. It really did. And that was like, it was, he won, but definitely not, it looked like he was going to win by open length, and he really got a little bit late there. Now, you could say, hey, he lost focus, and that was the reason why, but it wasn't pretty to watch him in deep stretch, even though he held on to win.
I came across something, and I'll slip it in here, and it was while I was handicapping the Gulfstream card, and in particular looking at the maiden races. And since we just brought up Leams Map and Leams Point's win last Saturday, a very strange thing jumped out at me. In the Thoroughgraph sire profile stats, Leams Map, so far, this is his first group of three-year-olds, his first crop. He's had 28 colts or geldings, and he's had 24 fillies compete. The colts have made 80 starts, the colts and geldings. The fillies have made 75 starts. The colts are winning at a 21% or 26% clip. He's got 21 wins out of the 80 starts. And the fillies are just 8 for 75. And it kind of caught my, it just caught me sort of my eye, and then I looked at the in the money. The in the money stats are a little closer, and you know, 155 starts is a it's not enormous. Obviously, it's early in his career as a stallion, but it's not an insignificant number of starts either. And what is notable, I suppose, and maybe the Phillies will catch up at a certain point, but. From a in the money standpoint, 55% in the money for the boys and 43% in the money for the girls. So those stats are much closer. So maybe the Philly wins is an aberration, but just something to maybe, you know, keep an eye on this and see if his Colts are proving to be more, you know, more, have more prowess than his Phillies, Liam's map.
And I'll mention just in terms of the Kentucky Derby, he's got Basin, who is coming back in the Rebel. Definitely one to watch, keep an eye out. He's had a couple other nice 3-year-olds this year so far. So, definitely, getting some runners.
Well, and, you know, Phillies, young, you know, when it comes to two-year-olds, typically fillies will, you know, be out ahead of the boys. And so I don't know. I just, it's one of those little potential things to latch on to, you know, because, you know, people will make, you know, generalizations about, you know, a stallion's success. And there may be, you know, sort of a, you know, stat within a stat to parse out, and this may be a place. So we'll keep tracking that. James, let's dive into the weekend, and I imagine Gulfstream is the focus. Hard not to be. Let's talk about the Fountain of Youth, and then we'll bounce around.
Yeah, definitely. Dennis's moment comes back in the Fountain of Youth, and I think from a perspective of him showing some trackability and rating and such, I mean, it's an ideal situation where there's a lot of speed in the field. You know, he's going to look to settle a few lengths off the pace, ideally. And I think if the race had come back and there wasn't much pace in there, then it would have been more difficult to rate him, considering he, you know, hasn't raced since November, and even in that race was the stumbling start of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. So he could be a little keyed up off of the layoff, but this race just came up loaded, like I said. You know, to me, Chance It is the main challenger based on his Gulfstream form, outstanding win in the Mucho Macho Man. You know, I don't really see him as a Kentucky Derby contender because of the mile and a quarter distance of the Derby, but I think a mile and a 16th at Gulfstream is no problem for him. His problem is he's got three speed horses, Liam's Lucky Charm, Shotsky, and Eddie Indian, right to his inside, that figure to go. As seen on TVs in the middle of the field, he could also show speed. So, I mean, they're going to have to be committed to rating, or else they're going to scratch out of the race tomorrow and run in the Tampa Bay Derby instead.
Well, the options, it's amazing what happened here, because there was a field of eight that was pretty much written in stone, and then all of a sudden you had the four horses come marauding in here, at least two of which really have no business.
No business whatsoever. This cheap claimer is just ridiculous. He's in the field.
And I
could see if they were trying to fill the race, Steve, but I mean, they had eight horses in there. That's a tough beat. I think it really, the post draw hurts Eddie Indian also because, you know, he really ran a good race last time. He finished 11 lengths clear of Toledo in third in that Holy Bull and got, you know, just he's run two bang-up races at a one-turn mile and a mile 16th in the Holy Bull since switching from turf to dirt for Patrick Biacone, but he's in post 11. So, you know, ideally both he and Chance It, if they were drawn better, you know, you'd be looking at it where you, I think you'd be giving them a lot bigger chance to win. As it is, and it's just going to be really difficult in my eyes to beat Dennis's moment.
Well, and Jerry O'Dwyer is compromised with Shotsky, you know, from the 10 hole doesn't do him any favors. You know, the horse we should talk about, you know, given the focus that a lot of people have had on Chancet, as seen on TV, and I had a hard time, you know, eliminating him at all. I mean, if you like Chancet, you've got to respect as seen on TV.
No doubt. I mean, two real big races, you know, since coming back from a layoff, winning that juvenile sprint at Gulfstream Park West, got a real strong number, looked really good, I thought, that day. And then it was really just dead game in that Mucho Macho Man. That was really an exciting finish. And both horses, that race came back fast. Sol Volante was third, and then he went to Sam S. Davis. So there's no doubt about it. As seen on TV, sort of a similar profile to Chancet, where they both love Gulfstream, and they're both capable of running a big race, you would think, off of the Mucho Macho Man.
Well, then, to end the multis, James, obviously Dennis's moment is a strong A, who else do you use defensively in case you're finishing your pick four?
I mean, I think if you're looking at it defensively from that perspective, I mean, you just can't, like, use those horses on the outside. I'm going to take a stand against them. And I'm looking at a couple of Last Out Main winners. I'll start with number seven, Country Grammar, for Chad Brown. Really a horse that's a little interesting because he's raced twice for Brown, and he hasn't really been bet in either race. When he debuted at Belmont last October, he was almost 9-2, and he ran fourth that day on the turf. And then he came back November 11th at Aqueduct, stretched out the mile in eighth, and he went off 9-1. And really sort of a grinding type trip that to me was very similar to the way Modernist won, where he showed, you know, he showed some tactical foot to gain early positioning, and then drew off nicely in the final 16th of a mile to win by open length. So got a pretty solid figure for that. Shows a half-mile bullet work at Pace and Park. Really sort of caught everybody by surprise, it seems, because I read a lot of stories leading up to the Fountain Youth, and I didn't hear anybody mentioning him as a candidate or a possibility. But that's a horse that has some upside. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how he performs. And I'll also mention number one, Candy Tycoon. I know it's, you know, he's a little bit more, I think Country Grammar looks a little bit stronger than Candy Tycoon. But I can make a case where Candy Tycoon just needed racing experience to figure it out. He was odds on in his first three dirt races, came up short every single time. But last time out, he really took a nice challenge from a stablemate, Give Me Some Mo, who's in race eight tomorrow, Gulfstream. Turned him back nicely, Steve, to win going away by four lengths. That's the kind of race where, you know, this horse was rumored to be at Saratoga by some people, Pletcher's best two-year-old, before he debuted and went off 4-5. And it could be just a horse that needed 6 months to put it all together and is going to really start coming on. So he's a little bit of an intriguing long shot in my estimation in the Fountain Youth.
No, fair enough. And, you know, certainly a horse like Liam's Lucky Charm is going to get a little bit of attention. Clearly, Nick's just putting a line right through the Risen Star disaster when he was hyper and broke through the gate, and it just was not, you know.
He was rattled before he went in the first time. So, yeah, that was a situation where you can really just say he lost it before he ran.
Well, and you still have to make a decision about him because his best races obviously have been one turn.
Right, and I'll tell you one other potential scenario. Right away when I looked at this race on Wednesday night, I was willing to just openly dismiss Gear Jockey as one of those horses that didn't belong on here and, you know, should be running in some turf race. But the more I look at this race, Steve, it's a 12-horse field, and there's no confirmed closers in this field. I mean, there's no S-types in here. And to me, that last race at Gulfstream where he went on the dirt, he didn't have the best trip that day. He's going to take back, make one run, I know that the connections believe he has some talent. And, you know, you saw last year, we saw last year with Distinction and Hidden Scroll doing on the front end the race setup for a closer. So Gear Jockey is a little bit of an intriguing late running long shot in there in my eyes.
Well, and I had a couple of weird thoughts about Gear Jockey, because Rusty Arnold is not the type to run a maiden in a stake, although this one already has done that at the highest level. I mean, having been third in the Juvenile Turf. And yes, Calumet likes to participate, but I don't know. I put a big question mark here as to what do you do about him. So I
just thought he was too keen. I watched that race again yesterday. I thought he was too keen at the start of that race, coming back this year on the dirt. And I'm willing to give him an excuse in a sense. And he might not be good enough to win, but he could rally and hit the board at a huge number.
Yeah, and that's one way, obviously, to play this, is to try to figure out, especially if you're all in on Dennis's moment. Let's pick out a few more spots on this stakes laden card, James. What are some of the better bets tomorrow?
Well, I mean, I'm looking at multi race bets with Dennis's moment, and the only way that's going to pay is you get some value, and you may not get it could be all chalky. But I look at the McDiarmada right before that, Steve, and Dual Alpha has run two enormous races back-to-back, running fourth in the Breeders' Cup Turf. He was phenomenal last time in the Pegasus World Cup Turf. And he runs well at Gulfstream Park. But, he hasn't been the most consistent horse, seven-year-old gelding. And I see this race as setting up, with a much slower fraction. And a horse like a Thread of Blue loves Gulfstream Park. He came back last time off of a freshening in the tropical turf. There was way too much pace in that race. They were up there going 22 and change, 45 and change. They're going to be going about 3 or 4 seconds slower tomorrow. He's eligible to put him to sleep on the front end. And a Thread of Blue is a horse I'm definitely going to use in any multi-race bets, because I think he has a chance to steal this race wire to wire.
Well, on that same topic, and I agree that it looked like there was an absence of pace. Spooky Channel's a horse that can show some speed if he wants, and I'm looking to see if he'll be aggressively ridden. Reaching for the pace.
Channel Maker. He's going to be
Channel Maker.
I don't want him at Gulfstream, though. I mean, I can bet him in New York. But.
Anyway, I Spooky Channel's my price in there to figure out a way to be involved. But I don't disagree about the pace scenario.
I'll go look over a couple of the races. In the Gulfstream Park Mile, I just think there's a serious amount of pace signed on in that race, and I think it could work against a couple of the short price horses, or at least, Mr. Freeze, Zenden, or both like that vein. I think number 7 is a little intriguing, True Timber. I think the Pegasus World Cup was a little bit too far for him. And, he cuts back to one-turn mile that he loves and adds blinkers if he's eligible to get a better trip, perhaps. And another horse that I would look to use in any multi-race set in a price is number 11, Hot Creek Hustle. And he's a horse that's just been in the wrong distance his last three starts at 6 furlongs. Ran last time into Bobby's Wicked One, who was flat-out awesome that day, dominating on the lead. But that was a good setup race. One-turn mile hits him right between the eyes. He really ran well on the Big Pat Day Mile, and then two big races at Saratoga at 7 furlongs. Could get the right setup with a hot pace, and he's 12-1 on the morning line for Vicky Foley.
The problem is, I wasn't convinced that the pace boils over in here.
That's the real, it's. The thing with Bodie Express is, if you watch his race, he looked sort of dull in that race. I mean, this is like make or break time, and he's going to need some time off, you know, because that was just a terrible. I mean, he hung in for fifth, but I didn't think he was sharp for the game. And I just am anticipating him being, like, hard-ridden by Yaramillo to make the lead, and he's going to be out there winging it, and hopefully he'll have some pressure.
Well, again, let me go back to my, because I've got an arrow. With Zenden, I've got him, you know, with the, I put the little arrow stretching him out as potentially getting loose, and he was so tough in the Hooper, a fat man ran him down, but I've got
Oh, and the other horse in there is Rare Form, Steve. I mean, that horse.
Yeah.
You know, he has some juice, and you know, I look at both Rare Form and Bodie Express, where you know they've run some good races on the front end where they're wire to wire, and then their last start, they both don't make the lead, and it just could be a situation where they're like, "Hey, we got to go to have a chance to win."
Well, I'm focused, and I like True Timber. I'm glad you brought him up. But I've got Fat Man, True Timber, Mr. Freeze, and Hot Creek Hustle as, you know, as the four principals, and I've got this parentheses around Zenden. I how many times over the years, you particularly with Pletcher, they turn for home, and you know you see this horse out there, and you think, you know, they're going to corral him, and he just keeps going. So I don't know. I've got to use Zenden somehow in there. He scares me. All right, what else?
Well, I didn't really have a strong opinion in the Devona Dale, Steve. I do think it's between the two fillies that are stepping up to make their stakes debut. Pletcher's Philly, Spice's Knight, and DeVoe's Philly coming back, Byroness. I really like Byroness. I mean, Spice is nice. Looks like she could just be a freak. Really sort of excited to see her come back and run tomorrow. But Byroness, I really did like her last race. Swiss Skydiver, who was the favorite in that allowance at Churchill, looked like a winner in deep stretch, and she really accelerated to run her down. Looks like a filly with some upside. So I'll use both those horses in any multi race bets, and I will mention a race on the undercard. You know, you mentioned Pletcher on these big race Saturdays does so well. This race number 8 is a pretty interesting 1 mile maiden race, a special 8 for 3-year-olds. Got a lot of horses coming back where they were either in against Edge of Fire, who's a curl and colt for Jimmy Jerkins that I'm intrigued by. Market Analysis, Precise Dancer ran third, first time out to Market Analysis, who looks like a good one for Pletcher. And but the thing about this race is 10 of the horse, the two first time starters I don't like, and 9 of the other 10 aren't speed types. And I just think the Gimme Some Mo is just going to take this race wire to wire for John V. He comes off that aforementioned second to Candy Tycoon I talked about.
Yep.
5-1 on the morning line. He's not going to be an overwhelming favorite. And that's the kind of Pletcher that I'll look to single. And if the price is right, bet him to win.
I don't disagree. You mentioned Precise Dancer, obvious as an inclusion, Mr. Candy Ride. If there's a price, Awakened, Shug, Awakened, I thought was maybe usable, but I agree about Gimme Some Mo, and he's got the whole backstretch to work with. You know, in terms of don't worry about the 12 hole.
I heard you say earlier you've been watching some races in Saudi Arabia, or at least watching one race, and that is a wild track. How wide it is! I mean, it is wide from in Grand Center rail to the inside rail, and the stretch. I mean, it looks like if they could like run 4.5 furlong baby races at Keeneland from the top of the stretch to the wire. I mean, that is a long stretch run. But the race, obviously, I think there's 4 main contenders in the Saudi Cup, the $20 million Saudi Cup. Mucho Gusto, Maxim Security, McKenzie, and even Ben Battle. I like Ben Battle better than I like Tacitus or Midnight Bisou. Have to respect that last race he ran on dirt. It says he won by 2 lengths, but it was much more impressive than it looks on paper. Really took to the dirt at Maidan. And the horse I'm going with is Mucho Gusto, Steve. And it's just, a part of it is I think the price is still going to be fair value on him. And he's a horse I just think, and we've seen this before with three-year-olds that had some class at three where they can get a lot better at four. The most recent example was Gunrunner, who second in the dirt mile and the best older horse at age four a year later. And Mucho Gusto's race in the Pegasus World Cup was an enormous improvement for him. I don't even think he had the best trip. I thought he was a little bit, like anxious at the start off the long layoff. Really got taken in hand by Iran Ortiz after the opening quarter mile, and then came again brilliantly to win very, very easily. I like the fact he came back 14 days later, breezed 5 furlongs at Santa Anita, and then came back a week later and did 6 furlongs and won 11 and change easily. So that horse just looks like he's tied on. He has to travel overseas like all of them do, but I think he's really poised to make a big move forward as a four-year-old, and I'm going to take a shot on him tomorrow morning.
Very good. James Scully, everybody. Twin Spires blog roll, and we'll be back on the
And I'm going to try to give you one final. Well, yep. I've been faltering on the last second Friday picks, but on today. Hopefully, the horse didn't get bet down from 6-1. Number 4, race 7, nuclear option, wire to wire with Julio Felix.
Now, Ingrid Mason, who very frequently, when she wins, it's wire to wire. That's not unusual. James, I appreciate it. Good luck this weekend. We'll talk next week. And we got Tampa Bay Derby to get excited
Felipe
about.
It's going to be Dynamite.
And the Gotham.
And the Gotham.
All right. James Scully.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Great. Have a great weekend.
You too. We'll stay right here. Nick Tamaro standing by. And last weekend, again, we combined for a nice pop on the cross country and 544 Nick last week, which was okay.
Yeah, wasn't too bad. Ended up playing out somewhat simply. I think given what we talked about on Friday, and of course there was multiple points of action with Aqueduct having a pick 5 carryover on the Saturday card, and that came back a relatively modest $178, one of those winter days where the biggest price on the whole card was $960. Doesn't happen terribly often, but happens often enough, and when the days like that do occur, you have to try and just deal with what they've given you. But I'll tell you a card where there's not going to be a high price of $960 is that Gulfstream card tomorrow. I think it starts at about 8 in the morning and ends sometime 12 to 13 hours later. It does look very good, though, no doubt about it.
It's fun. We'll get a couple of we'll get some thoughts if anything you like there in a couple of minutes. Let's dive into the cross country tomorrow, and I gave it just a thumbnail. I was kind of focused on Gulfstream, but once again, it's got its potential.
Yeah, it does. It starts. So it's a. The first race in the sequence, and this was a problem that happened last week as well, the second leg is going to go off after the first leg because Tampa does not run according to post time, and I'm not being flippant in saying that it's like Gulfstream, but their post times are just guidelines. So don't be confused by the sequence of the races. There also is a cross-country pick 5, despite there really being no publicity for it whatsoever. And it's going to have the same 3 tracks that it generally does. And I'm not trying to just be a wise-ass, but you won't see it really anywhere. And obviously what's understandably dominating the racing previews and news coverage at this point is this extravaganza at Gulfstream. But I mean, as we've talked about in the past, we want to support these cross-country bets as much as we possibly can, and this is yet another opportunity. So the first race, at least if you're going track by track, is from Tampa. The 7th at Aqueduct is one of 2 from Aqueduct. And it's a New York Red allowance race where Freaky Styley is the morning line favorite. And we kind of got to know Freaky Styley a little bit earlier in his career where he didn't perform really with any kind of he performed well, don't get me wrong, but he had some opportunities to break his maiden, didn't quite get it done, and then ultimately just beat a field that he proved to be a lot better than. But he actually did it pretty impressively. He sat on top of a pretty quick pace. What was behind him was very, very modest at best, and this is a situation going the same one-mile distance where I think he's going to be a little bit off of the pace given the presence of Captain Frost and a couple of other horses that should mix it up in the early going. I didn't really think it was a race where contention ran up incredibly deep. I think Freaky Styley's the horse to beat. Obviously, if Yankee Division runs back to his two-life claiming win last time, then he's going to have a say in it. He's going to have to more than likely stalk just outside of the aforementioned Captain Frost, who seems to only kind of know one way, and with Jose Lascano over in Saudi Arabia, Kendrick Harmoose gets the mount, and obviously you'd expect him to be even more forwardly placed if possible. You know, there really wasn't anybody long shot wise that I was overly interested in. Beach Access is going to offer some value. He was second sort of by default to Playwright. Of course, Playwright came back and won in his next start last Saturday in that Aqueduct Pick 5 sequence. So there was really no harm in that. I thought maybe you could make an argument that Beach Access dove down to the inside, which probably wasn't the most ideal place for him to be. So I think you could see him running maybe a little bit better, and it may not take a whole heck of a lot more than what he put forth last time to at least have a say in it. So I thought it was relatively simple, and you're probably going to focus your action on the 4 and 9, and more than likely going to back up with the 1 and 5.
Yeah, I completely agree. And if you hadn't brought up Beach Access, that would have been the one I would have said, you know, there's a little something there. Okay, good.
Yeah, and that gives way to the Bernardini, which we'll just go track by track on it, which is a good race, and it's a race that was put in a couple of years ago to try and create kind of a distance series that ultimately ends with the Brooklyn, which is the only dirt race in New York that got a purse increase for 2020. And the interesting horse, of course, in here is Patagonia. Patagonia won on mandatory payout day for the Empire Six at the end of 2019, and what was impressive about his win was that he ran down Communicator, who up to that point had looked like he probably was destined for graded stakes. Of course, Communicator since has come back and run very, very poorly at Oaklawn. And the figure in that race just came back. It was okay. It wasn't particularly great, just an 88. But I think the collective thought is going to be that Patagonia should really benefit from going a little bit longer, and certainly has a versatile running style in that he can be forwardly placed if necessary. You're going to have to tab the scratches in here because Bob Claseris named Edgar Prado on Backside of the Moon. Edgar Prado's got a bunch of mounts booked in Florida tomorrow, so I don't know whether he's planning on changing jockeys on Backside of the Moon or if he's actually planning on running him, but he's a horse, obviously, that you'd want to take note of if he was in the field. It looks like there should be plenty of pace with Ektabar and Armament. Armament potentially is going to come back on 5 days rest, having just been claimed on Sunday by Eddie Barker, essentially running this horse on Rob Attrus's training. And you have Leitone, who stretches out after he was asked to back down the pace a little bit at a mile last time and ultimately was run down late by Sir Winston in what was arguably one of Leitone's poorer performances. Now, the thing about that horse is that he has had a number of big efforts where circumstance have really gone his way. So I think you want to be somewhat critical of him while understanding that his speed is also a pretty dangerous weapon. And that sort of leads you to what you ultimately want in here is a horse who's going to be making a big move. And I know that Adventist has gotten two pretty big paces to run at lately, and you're going to have to take more like 6-1 on a horse that's been 15-1 and 28-1 in his last two starts. But boy, this thing looks like it could just fall right in his lap. And I still have a hard time believing that he'll go off a shorter price than horses like some of the horses that have similar figures like a Backside of the Moon or Patagonia, who may have connections that are a little bit more catchy, I suppose you could say. So I thought he was interesting. I didn't have a particularly strong opinion. Obviously, if Backside of the Moon shows up, you want to give him pretty serious consideration. I think the distance will prove no problem, and we still know that there's a lot of upside with Patagonia. So you've got a few different ways to go, and I mean, I think if provided at least the speed portion of it stays together, this is a race that feels like it really could heat up a lot on the front end.
Nice. So who do we have to use number-wise?
I think we have to use, I would say the horses that I would make must uses, and again, this is a race where you want to be as cautious as possible, of course, and I mean, I would must use Adventist. I would probably, if he runs, I would definitely use Backside of the Moon. And I would say I would use Patagonia as my main horses, at least at this point, basing it on what we think is going to end up running. And then if Backside of the Moon were to scratch, but there's still that same amount of pace signed up with the 4, 5, and 6 all running, I'm sorry, with the 4, 5, and 7 all running, then I might consider putting in a horse like either Heavy Roller or Dynamax Prime.
Heavy Roller, you know, the last two, you know, since Atrus got him back, you know, they're tough to argue with.
And the mile was short last time. Wicked Trick is also in career form, so running into him was obviously no bargain. Clearly he's going to benefit from having a little bit more ground to work with. Rob Atrus won this race last year with Royal Albert Hall, who I believe has not won a race since then. And you know, this is another horse that's just going to be sort of running one speed around the track, and that feels like kind of exactly what you want, given the likelihood that the pace will at least be decent.
Let's go to Tampa and get that eighth race in, which is a starter handicap, going a mile and an eighth.
This is an interesting race, of course, and you know, one of the things that we saw at Tampa last week, which we touched on Friday, and it played out in terms of the way we handicapped going into it, is that Saving Ground at Tampa, Saving Ground on every turf course obviously is important, but at Tampa in many ways, it's just a little bit more important. It's mainly because that's a flat turf course with little to no banking on the turns. So trying to make a big, wide, sweeping move is really not advisable. And the winner, who was trained by Kent Sweezy, that you brought up specifically on Friday, had endured a pretty wide trip in his prior start. So we'll look. Obviously, you want to look for horses in running lines. If you don't regularly do replay work at Tampa that look like they may have gone wide on opportunities in the past, and you want to upgrade them in the future. Hope Again is the horse to beat in this race, the three. He was stuck behind a slow pace last time, did not have a clean trip at all, was able to save some ground along the way in there, but ultimately was just a little out of position, and I think Jesus Castañon was probably just a little too passive with him in the early stages. Camacho gets back on, and he's one of the leading riders at the meet who's had success on this horse in the past. So, I mean, I think in all likelihood he's going to be a little bit more forwardly placed, and that's going to help. I don't expect him to be on the lead at all, but you know, this is a race I think that'll have a relatively legitimate early pace, given that they're coming out of the chute and the main speeds are all the way drawn on the outside, so there's going to have to be a little work that goes into establishing the early running. That being said, I think Patty Odini is a very dangerous horse for Kent Sweezy, who was on top of a strong pace last time at Gulfstream and really never stopped running and ended up well clear of the balance of the field, even being beaten five lengths, which you usually don't see that kind of separation in a one-mile turf race. But I think this horse has kind of reinvented himself now that he's gone to Sweezy's barn, because even though two back, the running line, and this is a running line that belies the quality of the performance, he was involved in an extremely fast pace, and this is a horse that I would say, if you're overly results-oriented, you would have wanted no part of him last time. And granted, he only ran third, but you know, he was a horse that obviously made an impact in the race, and now facing competition, which I think anybody would say from top to bottom, both looking at that field and looking at this field, you would definitely, and looking at the different respective class levels from Gulfstream to Tampa, you would definitely say that this is a drop in class. So I would make sure to use Patty Odini. Domain is an interesting horse to me. He comes out of the same race that I was discussing with Hope Again, and he actually ran well to finish second. This is another horse that was taken well off the pace and there didn't get much pace to run at, but did get a clean trip through on the inside. So that was, I think, one of the things that worked in his favor. So no question about it. I mean, we could talk about just about everybody in this field. Small Hope didn't have a clean trip last time either against Tuffer. Now he's dropping in class. I think you'd probably want to give him some consideration. Also from Sweezy's barn, and he's got back races that win this very easily. So it's for the class level, it's a really deep and competitive race. And I think if hopefully you can find some spots along the way where you can go a little narrow, that way you can have be a little bit more liberal here in terms of how many to get on your ticket.
Well, and I, you know, I'm not somebody that chases jockey maneuvering. However, Centeno being reached for by Michael Wright on Bourbon Extension, and they reunite from a win back on Boxing Day. And Wright makes appointments with Centeno. they're 3 for 5 together, and I circled Centeno's name just because, you know, he's a terror on that oval, and the fact that he didn't you know, he won that race more or less just kind of setting up near the speed and not needing the lead. I think he's dangerous.
Yeah, and obviously having Centeno on the turf there is a big advantage. There's no question about it. He's a very, very skilled turf rider, and obviously he's been winning races at Tampa and bunches for years and years.
Yeah, exactly. In some ways, we had Deshaun Parker yesterday. They got that same, you know, that same kind of, regional dominance. And there's a lot of guys like that you know, prefer to stay, you know, at the B circuit or even the C circuit and just dominate. And if they took their talent to, you know, to the A tracks, they could compete. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with being the big fish in a medium-sized pond.
Exactly. You know, Deshaun made a good decision years and years ago to start coming to Sam Houston, and he did well, obviously, when the purses were minuscule, and even with David Cabrera here, he's having a very good meet. Obviously won those 4 Texas Bread Stakes.
Crazy. That's why I called him.
Right. For two of his best clients, well, one of his best clients was Brett Calhoun, and then also for Mindy Willis, who he rides a lot of races for as well. So, no, Deshaun is a very, very skilled rider, good on both surfaces, certainly doesn't put his horses in bad positions very often. And, yeah, I think it compares favorably to a guy like Centeno, who, when you get entrenched at a given circuit and you connect with the horsemen, you end up on the best horses pretty frequently. And when you got a little bit more talent than your peers, it certainly plays out.
Let's get to the 2 legs at Oaklawn in the cross-country pick 5.
So the Oaklawn pair are the 6th and 7th. And typical, of course, of Oaklawn, we're going to be looking at a couple of very competitive races, including this money allowance for older females in the 6th. And obviously, Irish Mischief is the horse to beat, and I'm not going to beat up on Irish Mischief too much because my friends at Ten Strike Racing own her in partnership, but she was just horrendous last time. I mean, if you would have told me that she was going to get the kind of trip that she did and she was going to finish like that, I would have been very, very surprised. So, you know, she has... What's interesting to me about this horse is I feel like she's underperformed at Oaklawn, and I'm wondering if she just doesn't like Oaklawn. And apparently she trains well, but if you look and you really pick apart her PP, she got better when she left Oaklawn. And coming back with that relatively modest effort after the way she closed out 2019, I was surprised. Now, that being said, is something similar to what she ran last time probably just going to be good enough to beat this field? I mean, unless Headland comes back off the short layoff with a pretty big effort, I would imagine so. I don't think they're going to go quickly enough up front for Caliente Candy to get there from way off the pace. And I understand that maybe her stable may prove an appeal, could offer a little bit of appeal, pun intended, to some of the people looking at the race. Irish Mischief is just better than these horses. And even with an 81 fig in a race where she was sitting outside with a good trip, you certainly can't hold some of her past races against her. So I know we talked about, I heard a couple of people mention Raintree Starlet when she ran in the American Beauty last time. I thought that was a pretty tough assignment off the layoff. I kind of felt like maybe having the inside was not that big a deal for her, and I thought maybe you could try and find a way to get her on the ticket. Some of her past Oaklawn races are very, very good, and clearly the drop in class will help. There's speed in here, no doubt, with Classy Act signed up, and Irish Mischief, of course, will show some amount of speed. Headland has speed, so you're going to want to look for somebody, I think, that can maybe make up a little bit of ground. Hopefully Irish Mischief, if you're backing her and looking to narrow your ticket down there, can take a little bit off of it and make a run. But, boy, I'd be nervous. Like I said, she looks better than these horses on paper, but that was far from a compelling performance in a situation where things were, I would go so far as to say they were served up to her pretty well, and Special Relativity, handled her very easily.
What about Caliente Candy, who's perfect at Oaklawn?
Yeah, I thought the problem was just there wouldn't be quite enough pace.
Yeah.
But she didn't get a huge pace to run at last time, but they went a little bit in front of her, and she was able to gather everybody in. But, you know, class test wise, I think that's what you're most concerned about. If you believe there's going to be enough pace in here, then you certainly want to get her on there.
She's consideration. Let's put it that way. Let's go to the seventh, and this will be the anchor leg. It's a maiden special, and we've got fillies and mares. This is, these are four and ups, and so you've got some that their careers have obviously been delayed or interrupted to be at this point to be winless.
Right, and it always brings together a pretty eclectic bunch. You got a soft morning line favorite of from Jerry Hollendorfer's barn at 3-1. So clearly it's a race where contention runs deep. Shocking Fast makes her first start for Steve Asmussen after debuting for Bob Baffert last year, and was one of those Baffert horses that has a what looks like a decent enough pedigree, even though she's a homebred, and didn't take any money in two starts. So in all likelihood, this is a horse that probably wasn't training particularly well, and now comes back off the layoff, which we've talked about this a little bit in the past. Asmussen's a lot better off of layoffs than he used to be, but it's still not something that you really look at and say, oh yeah, no, I want to have that Asmussen horse off the layoff. The morning line price on Tis a Goddess sort of throws you off a little bit because, you think, okay, well, Maker, first-time starter on the dirt. This is a horse that's not going to take a whole great deal of money. But I know that digesting the work tab can be very, very dangerous. This is a horse that feels like she's been training okay and had a couple of quick works at Fairgrounds before going up to Oaklawn, and now debuts for Maker in a situation where she's running for almost $90,000. So you have to think that a shrewd horseman like Maker is going to get a horse there that belongs. I also felt like Golden Command, second time out, would probably benefit from having that race under her belt. She's a horse who took some money in getting bet to 15-1 in a pretty competitive spot. This is the kind of race where you really want to be, you want to take a shot on anyone who you think offers appeal, because there are no participants in here that look like they stand out. It is a very contentious race, and so I'm going to use horses like Golden Command, like Tis a Goddess. You have to use Exchange West just based on the way she ran off the layoff and now going second off the bench. And obviously you'd be foolish to be beaten by Shocking Fast in any kind of horizontal wager. So I think you can go a lot of different directions. I think that there are going to be people that even though I criticized her to some extent, there are going to be people that try and find their way to probably going a little narrow with Irish Mischief. So we'll see. I mean, as you go through it, you have to be as judicious as possible, but you're going to find yourself looking for an opportunity where you need to have a lot of horses in the last race.
Yeah, I agree. Because it's just kind of a in and outers, and then you got the maiden, the first timers, to consider, and typically they don't have to be a lot in a setting like this. So, tough way to wrap it up. But it's, these have been paying well, even last week when you really only had to get clever on the one horse, which we were lucky to find, the Kent Sweezy, that was a crazy overlay. I mean, 14-1 was nuts on that one. So that was all right. And it made the day palatable. Nick, before we go, let's jump to Gulfstream. Any things that you really like that leapt off the page at you?
I mean, I'm interested to see the Fountain of Youth from a I thought the draw ended up being kind of crazy with Chance at being on the far outside in a race that looked like it was going to have a moderate-sized field and ended up having a full field of 12. So I think he's the best horse in the race. I know it's gone around Twitter. It's obviously available on XBTV. I don't like to spend a whole great deal of time looking at workouts for horses that I don't see train on a regular basis, but Dennis's Moment looked to struggle to stay within a few lengths of Admire in his workout two back, and so I don't have any great amount of confidence that he's going to come back off the layoff offering a whole heck of a lot, and I think he's facing horses that he's going to have matured significantly from 2 to 3 to compete with horses like As Seen on TV and Chance It and some of the other ones in here. I mean, even including horses that you are expecting bounce backs from, like Shotsky. I thought Ette Indian ran great last time and probably doesn't have to be on the lead like he was. I think he could be outside stalking, which is a trip that his jockey prefers as well. So yeah, it should be an honestly run race. I think there's a good amount of speed signed up. And if Tyler Gaffalione can get Chance It over and save some ground at some point without getting hung up too much, I think he's just going to prove to be a little bit better than these horses. And we'll see how much farther he wants to go. If he can can maybe get to a mile and an eighth and beyond. And, you know, he's one horse, I think, in a crop that everybody bitches about how bad the crop is in February. I mean, no one says anything nice until – no one says anything nice really, period, pretty much at all. And I can't – I'm not one to make fun of people complaining. I'll admit that. But I think there are actually some pretty nice horses in this crop. I think they're just – I think that the speed figures at times don't look like they should for some people, but I mean, when you understand, you went through a cycle of second preps like the Holy Bull and the Risen Star and the Southwest, and you saw some mid and high 90 buyers. Tis the Law got 100. Those are good numbers for this time of year. So hopefully, sure, this ends up being a fast race too, and we see a pretty compelling performance. So I'm most interested to see that race. In terms of betting, I'm going to have to lose some money on True Timber in the Gulfstream Park mile, just getting back to what I think he does best, which is a one-turn mile. And if you isolate his Kelso and Cigar Mile in terms of one-mile races that he's run recently, I think they're better than anything any of these horses can do themselves. So I'm hopeful that the blinkers relax him a little bit and that he's able to take back and make one run. Hopefully Joe Bravo is patient and doesn't make the move at the 3/8 pole like he's notorious for doing, because I think True Timber might actually be kind of a sneaky horse under the surface. He should be every bit of 10 or 12 to 1, and this looks like a race where they should really blast off early, and I think that would help his cause. It'll certainly help the cause of his stablemate High Cal as well, who hung a little bit last time, was herded out by Lone Rock, but came back off the layoff, all things considered, in pretty decent shape. Probably should improve second off the bench. These turf races are just minefields, one after another. Big fields. It looks in the Canadian turf to me like you should have a pretty decent pace with Gementeer and Gadoo hooking up again. I was very intrigued by Mr. Dumas going to Mike Maker's barn. This is a horse who got really good in a hurry for John Ortiz, was put in deep water in the Hollywood Derby, and now off the layoff ends up with Maker. And this is a horse that Maker is probably going to to be able to move up quite a bit, just being so skilled with turf routers, and he feels like a horse who could definitely kind of fall between the cracks and go off a decent price. I have no opinion in the Devona Dale. I'm interested in seeing how what we get from Tonalist Shape and Spice is Nice. I think Byronis really has potential to be something very nice. And look, with horses like Etty Indian and Sole Volante running as well as they have, you'd be foolish to exclude a horse like Reluctant Bride, who obviously has shown some ability, ran a couple of decent races on the turf. But, I mean, this is a dirt pedigree. This is a horse that you could argue should have been on the dirt the whole time. Sole Volante and Etty Indian are by turf sires. But this is a Spitestown out of a multiple grade one winning dirt mare. So I think you really want to – it's going to be interesting to see what this horse has to offer. And if Patrick Biancone keeps taking turf horses and dirt, what ultimately end up being dirt horses, debuting them on the turf and switching their surfaces to get a little bit of a price, he's not going to do it tomorrow without my money being on there too.
And we should note, you bring up Reluctant Bride. Be aware that, you know, Flavian Pratt, who got the pickup mount for Dennis's Moment with Ortiz abroad, be aware, and I would highlight virtually every mount that Pratt has. And you know, take a look at some trips for, you know, prior, you know, the riders that were aboard prior on those horses, because Pratt will, you know, have a tendency to, in a lot of cases, elevate those that he's, you know, getting together with. So, and he's got a full slate tomorrow.
No question about it. And I will say that given some of these Patrick Biancone horses running, you see Pratt's name and Florent Giroux, I think you can only dub it the French Connection.
But I'm bump. Nick Tamro, everybody.
All-time great movie, by the way. I know you're a Gene Hackman fan.
Absolutely. A Friedkin fan. Connection to Nick, of course, NTAMM1215. Nick Tamro, everybody. Nick, thanks. Good luck. We'll talk next week.
Sounds great, Steve. Have a great weekend. Thanks for having me.
Nick Tamro, we'll stay right here. We got too much to do, and we've got Mike Welch coming up in 5 to 8 minutes. So let me get Ed DeRosa in and make sure to get some opinions from Ed. Ed, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be back.
Good to have you back, and we don't have to worry about any recapping. As I said to Scully, very quiet last week in terms of, you know, prominent stakes action, notably the three-year-olds. Let's dive right in to what is really a juicy day at Gulfstream, and there's some spots elsewhere as well. What do you like?
Absolutely. Well, there is a, and I can't not say this real quick, French Connection has the best car chase scene I've ever seen.
No doubt.
So if you haven't watched that movie, that alone is worth it, but plenty of other reasons too. there is a, speaking of chasing, a pick five carryover tonight at Sam Houston. Wanted to hit people too. There's also that Stronach 5 carryover in the afternoon, but 17,000 added at Sam Houston with the low takeout on the new money, and had a couple horses that caught my eye in race 7, which is leg 2. Number 9, Ribbon Kane, is a deep closer, and they're going 5.5, so certainly up against it from that standpoint. But there is speed in here, Steve, and at 12-1 morning line, just feel like that's a horse I want to use as a potential separator. Again, going to have a lot to do, but I think we're being compensated price-wise. And then in race 8, $7,500 maiden claimer, so no real surprise that most of those that have run so far have not done much running. But it just does not look like a good group, even for the level. And that landed me on first-time starter Buzuki. The Dam as a first-out winner. Actually, this horse has started, but just never ran in the opener. Even less than Dennis's moment style, we'll get to in a moment. But the Dam has some early winners. Greg Tracy, 6-29, maiden claiming. So I thought that one was worth a look when there weren't a lot of alternatives of runners, and that one's 8-1. So plenty to look forward to tomorrow. But as a staunch Sam Houston supporter, wanted to take a peek at the carryover for tonight.
Absolutely, and we had a nice conversation with Chris Griffin last week, head of the Texas racing, and then Deshaun Parker yesterday, off the sweep of the four stakes. Let's dive into the meat of the Fountain of Youth card.
Yeah, well, the Fountain of Youth, obviously, what a race. I haven't done much social media this week, doing a little cleanse before I head to Oaklawn for the Rebel. But certainly have kept up on the news and peeked in on certain feeds. And it seemed like earlier in the week they were talking about a short field for the Fountain of Youth. And here we are with a solid dozen. And I'm here to make a big case for Country Grammar. Tonalist is a sire I've enjoyed betting against with his first-time starters and giving him time to develop. This horse is getting runners as they stretch out, and potentially Country Grammar to me looks no different off the 9-furlong maiden score. Normally don't love 2-year-old routers or horses who need 9 furlongs to break their maiden, but, you know, sometimes that's just how the track works, and that's what Aqueduct's like. It's either a one-turn mile or you go out to the mile in an eighth. So I'm not going to hold it against them at a big price against this field. Certainly, to me, Steve, with the pace dynamics, you have inside speed, outside speed. You have horses you like to press. And maybe this one's the one who's running best late of all at a nice price under Castellano for Chad Brown. So Country Grammar to me, I can't imagine we won't get our price with the heavies in there. Dennis's moment's number one on my Derby list. So, you know, I'm expecting him to show up. I'm still a believer. I'm looking forward to talking with Dale tonight inside Turfway Park here in Louisville and hear what he has to say. But Country Grammar, I think, is the one, even if Dennis's moment can win, still spice things up underneath.
All right.
So,
some others?
A little bit of a flyer. I thought Nods was worth a look down on the rail, too. I mean, maybe save some ground and gets the right trip. I don't think he needs the lead from that spot. And I don't know. This is as compelling a handicapping puzzle as I can remember, you know, with the full field and obviously the question marks with the two favorites. You know, this is what Derby season's all about, is they're going to have to show it on the track.
Agreed. Some other plays.
Mac Dermata, I'm on admission office. Wind shy, but competitive numbers and gets in light. And, you know, it just seems like for the last year and a half, Steve, this older male turf division has been trading wins at decent prices. I was fortunate enough to be on Zulu Alpha last out. So, you know, soft spot in my heart for him, but I'm price shopping again. This group just is not consistent enough. I mean, they're all consistently good. I didn't mean that as a criticism, but You know, there's just no superstar enough to take a favorite in these type of races, and maybe it's admissions office turn at 15-1. And then the Gulfstream Park Mile, I went with Duchere, who seems to have a reputation as a 6-furlong horse, and why not? That's where the big wins have come from. This is sort of an enormous trust play, though, at a decent price, 15-1 morning line. He's had this horse a bit. He won his first start for the barn and just sort of, you know, didn't get it done elsewhere. But that trip at Fairgrounds was really rough, and I love that Leperoux stays aboard. I mean, he rides for Norm a lot, so it's not like that's too out of the ordinary, but he got a feel for the horse. He actually didn't ride him in the win for Norm at Churchill, but I see no reason why Candy Ride can't get a mile. I mean, this horse just sort of did his best work at 6, but Norm's for a couple months now, and I like to share it a price.
I didn't know what to do about Duchere. Okay.
So those were my 5 plays, the late pick 3 at Gulfstream. I actually wanted to do the whole off-stakes pick 4. I couldn't land on a strong opinion in the Canadian turf, but that's another race. I think all 4 of these races could produce $20-plus winners. So I have some decisions to make budget. I really want to go for it, or, you know, maybe I play just pick 3s or look at some spot plays in the doubles and just try to make the most of my opinions race to race. But this is must watch racing to me, the best card of the year so far.
Yeah,
and no disrespect to Risen Star Week 2 weeks ago, but
no,
this was a blockbuster.
Absolutely deep and beyond the stakes. Mike Welsh joining us now, and you know, the maiden races. We haven't talked about the 3-year-old turf events like the Palm Beach yet, you know, there's just so much here, opportunities will abound. Ed, best of luck. I appreciate it. We'll talk
My
next
pleasure.
Week ahead of the. You got it. Thanks.
Big weekend. All right. Take care, guys.
EJXD2, Ed DeRosa, everybody. Mike Welsh standing by. Mike, good morning.
I'm actually sitting.
All right, that's fair enough. How was the hockey game?
Bad result, but fun time. Went with a good group, Privman, McGee, and Kate Bradar. So the only one rooting for Toronto was Marty. He was the only one financially involved in the game, but it was... It was an exciting game, just bad result for the home team.
Well, you know, Marty does remind me of Punch Imlach a little bit. He's got.
I was thinking Gump Worsley, but
that works too. That works too. And actually, Jay, I'm going to get a picture. I bet you Jay looks a lot like Dave Keon, who had that, you know, tall, angular look, right?
I'm not going there. I'm not getting in any trouble. I don't want to get either of them mad at me. So,
well, Jay, could Jay win the Lady Bing?
He's a pretty sedate guy. Yeah, I don't think he takes too many penalties.
Mike, what a eye-crossing card to look forward to tomorrow. And I imagine we're looking, a 15-page clocker report.
It's going to be pretty long. I'm just in the middle of sorting everything out now, entering the final ones from here. My other guys are already in, and it is a long one, and it's a good one again. Hopefully, you know, you never know, but got a lot of good stuff on there.
Well, I think we can hit some highlights, and you know, the feature. Let's talk about the Fountain of Youth, and I got to ask, how is it that year after year, and this is doesn't matter. It seems, you know, who's in the racing office. There's these incursions from horses that are hopeless that then are going to make it difficult for the serious horses that were ready to participate all along. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's a shame the way it happened and the way it turned out with the post-position draw. Look, you can't keep guys out that want to run, I guess. I mean, they have the right. I talked to Safi about this, and I said, were you a little upset? Because, you know, we all thought there was going to be 8 there about an hour before the draw, and they wound up with 12. And I asked him that question, and he said, look, you know, it's hard to tell a guy your horse isn't good enough, or, you know, who's to know if these horses are going to get better. And he said, look, Math Wizard was a 16 claimer, and Maximum Security at one point was a 16 claimer, and Bodie Express ran second as a maiden in there. I'm sure if the office had their druthers last year, they'd have told him to go elsewhere, too, and he came up big. So it's a touchy situation, especially when you don't see it coming. You know, and Safi didn't see it coming. We didn't see it coming. So, you know, it's just unfortunate. It really puts those guys in the outside post in a bind. I've just been texting a little bit with Safi right now, trying to get a feel for what he might be doing. He's got a tough decision to make. I mean, if he's sitting there with 20, 30 points in his pocket, Derby points, it wouldn't be as big a deal. You know, you run him from out there. If things don't work out well, you still might grab a piece and grab some more points, and then you're fine going into the Florida Derby. You run from out there, you get hung up wide and a bad trip, and he doesn't run his race and finishes out of the points, you know, situation. Now you've got all your apples in one basket going to the Florida Derby, and who's to say there won't be 12 in there and you get a bad post again, too? So it's just a shame the horse is doing so good, Chance it is. And, you know, the same could be safer. Ete Indian and Shotsky, too. I mean, they're not that much better off at 11 and 10, to tell you the truth. So there's rumors going around that one horse might come out of here. But, you know, looking at the stats over the years, post-11, post-12, there's really not that much of a difference.
Well, assuming everybody stays in, how did you finally parse this out selection-wise?
I still picked Chance It for the paper. Thinking, you know, maybe a couple come out and he's in 9 or 10, and I wouldn't want to not have the horse I think is the best horse as my top pick, you know what I mean? Yep. With the caveat that from post 12, it's going to be a tough situation for him. I'm also thinking if he's still in post 12 come 11 o'clock Saturday morning, maybe Safi scratches him and decides to go to Tampa instead because that's his alternative. The problem with that is not only do you have to shift to a track you've never been on before, but it sort of takes the Florida Derby out of the mix as your next option, unless you were to win in a jog and then not really take too much out of a horse. So, you know, I'm sure there's been a lot of sleepless nights in the camp, you know, not only the Safi, but the connections as well, the owners, what to do here. And but I picked him on top. I went with As Seen on TV, second. I thought against Chance It was terrific. Looks like he's training in a little bit different manner, according to the works I've gotten from Donald. He was training lights out going into the Mucho Macho Man from a workout standpoint. B-plus is all across the board. Not quite that here, but it looks like Kelly Green is more on a maintenance kind of work schedule with him rather than looking for him to do anything eye-catching. So, I just thought that race is good. I mean, he could have given it up at the eighth pole very easily, but he just kept coming and coming, and Chancel was able to gut it out. And I think both trainers did the absolute right thing by skipping the Holy Bull off a gut-wrenching race like that and, you know, then zeroing in on the Fountain of Youth in the Florida Derby, supposedly. I mean, again, I'm not exactly sure what they're going to do with Chance It comes Saturday. My guess is they'll probably run and just hope things work out. But, you know, from post 12, you either got to go and hope you can get over, and that might not be so easy. There's a lot of speed inside them. Or you take back, you know, angle in, go mid-pack, and then hope this horse could come running late, and if not win, at least pick up, you know, 10 or 20 points for you going into the Florida Derby. So, you know, it's more about the points than anything else, I think, at this point. I mean, sure, you want to win the Fountain Youth. It's a great race to have on your resume. But with the point situation, what it is for the Derby this year, it's going to be pretty wide open mix. You got extra points in the mix now you didn't expect to have because of the split Risen Star. So, you know, I don't know. It's a tough call here for Safi. But the way he's training, I had to pick him on top.
Fair enough. And what's your opinion of Dennis's moment coming into this?
You know, he's certainly gotten better and better with every work. I wasn't crazy what I saw when he first started out here back in mid-January. But his works have improved. I'm not sure, at least, again, it's a matter of opinion. I'm not sure he's training quite as well going into this race as he was before his ill-fated Breeders' Cup Juvenile. But he's doing okay. I mean, the one thing Jay and I were talking about last night, you know, the form of the Iroquois with Scabbard and the rest of them in there, the field that he won in his grade three, has not, the form has not held up real well amongst those that he beat that day. So there's still some question marks. He looks good. I think maybe he could be a work or so away from his best race. And, you know, if you're down, you want to run well in here. You want to get points too, but you don't want to empty the tank for the next two, hopefully. But it's a tricky situation. Again, you know, points-wise, He's got to you know, make his bones here too, and next time. So, again, you know, you never know what's going to happen in 4 weeks. Could get 12 again, and it could be Dennis's moment in post 12. So who knows?
It's true. Before we talk about some other spots, Mike, one horse that I just like, and I've liked him since early on when he got his career going. Liam's Lucky Charm, and will absolutely forgive, as Ralph Nix obviously is, the Risen Star fiasco. But he also has to answer the two-turn question in general. When he's run his A races going 7/8, he's run competitive races that would fit here. What do you do about Liam's Lucky Charm?
I don't know. I my gut is I think he's a one-turn horse. I was a little surprised to see him entered in here. I thought he would wind up in the Hutchison, but Ralph's got another a good option for the Hutchison in Shivery.
Yep.
So I guess he chose here, whether it was his decision, Stonehenge decision, or who knows. But me, I'm gonna have to take a back seat here with him.
Yeah.
And he's not, you know, post nine isn't that great either, so that's a little second issue he's got. He's probably going to be forwardly placed with a lot of others in here too. I was surprised he ran that poorly in the fairgrounds, the way he trained going into the race. So maybe that is just the thing with him. He doesn't want to go that far, but we'll see.
Give us a couple of other thoughts. The turf racing is deep and compelling. There's a lot of horses that have been down there and are coming out of some trips. There's some pace questions to be answered, you know, particularly on the longer distance races. The McDermida.
Impossible. That's my word for the turf. All the turf races, the three-year-olds, the older ones.
Yep.
There's about six or seven in each race you could probably, you know, circle and say this horse could win if he gets the right trip. And you know, I say it 1,000 times, I'll say it 1,001, these races are just about always about the trips. And no more so than they're looking back at the Pegasus Turf with Zulu Alpha, who wound up slipping up the rail. Not that, you know, again, I liked him, I picked him that day because the way he was training going into the race, but he doesn't get that kind of trip, it might be a different situation. So it's all about pace and all about getting clean runs, and you know, the rider's doing the right thing at the right time. And the best turf jockey here right now is not here right now. He's going to be in Saudi. That's IRAD. So at least by being away, he's going to give a lot of these other guys a chance to share in some good money here on Saturday.
Well, on that topic, I'll bring it up again with you. I just mentioned it earlier with Nick Tamaro or Ed. The presence of Flavian Pratt can't be stressed enough. I mean, if you're looking for, in some cases, either an upgrade or just a quality feel on any turf course, take a hard look at what Pratt where he signed on.
Yeah, no, having Flavian come is definitely a huge asset for whoever managed to secure his services. I know Dale wasted little time when he knew IRAD wasn't going to be here to reach out to him. So, he's good to have. It's good to have, one of those big name replacing. We lost a couple of big name riders here Saturday, but having Flavian in the mix and Florent in the mix, that's a good thing.
Mike, what about the mile? Give us the way you're looking at the pace and the way the mile might unfold.
Well, I mean, it obviously looks like there's plenty of pace in there. Let me just scramble around to it here. There's so many. I got 200 pages of PPs in front of me here. With Bodhi Express in there on the rail and Zenden in the race, and then, of course, Mr. Freeze, you got to expect plenty of pace. I'm going to guess Mr. Freeze is going to take back and sit off and try to stalk from outside. You know, his best game is when he's on the lead, but he's got some wins from off the pace around two turns. So that's his best option there, and I'm sure that's the path he's going to take. I went back and picked Fat Man again. Now, it's not Irad this week. It's Javier. But, boy, this horse certainly seems to be peaking right now, coming in from Tampa for the race. Looks on paper like he's, you know, worked okay coming out of the Hooper. You know, he wasn't handed that race in the Hooper. He had to earn it. The pace was very fast, and it did set up for him. And I'm just expecting the same situation for him here. But he's run well in both the starts over this track. He seems to be going in the right direction. So I just said, why not? If he can trip out and get a clean run, why can't he win again?
All right, good. That doesn't bother me that you went in that direction. Another spot or two that you know you like?
Well, not so much I like, but a race I'm curious to see what happens is obviously the Devona Dale. You know, you've got four undefeated horses in here, actually. Tonal Shape, who's 4-for-4, being the most notable one, along with Spice's Nice, is 1-for-1, but that one was awfully impressive here about 6 weeks ago. It's asking a lot to step up from a maiden win in the graded stakes company and win again. We saw Chad Brown do that earlier in the meet on the turf course with one. You know, I talked to Todd about this, and I think he'd rather not do it this way, but he gave me several reasons why they're leaning toward this. They think she's a nice horse who could possibly be an Oaks contender, and in that way, or in that regard, they've got to get her going, stepping up, stretching out. There were no allowance races at the distance that he wanted coming up in the book with the right timing for that. So here she is. She didn't beat a lot that day, but she sure did it impressively enough. She's going to be forwardly placed, obviously, in this field. There is some speed. I think Chart will be on the lead. I look for her to race forwardly placed, not far off her. Tonal Shape, you know, again, the outside draw for Safi. He said he didn't mind it going a mile all that much. You know, some people, you know, going into the forward gal, I wasn't crazy about the way she was training. She did not train going into the forward gal like she had going into the hut, when she got that 89 buyer going a mile back in November. And she didn't run as well, but she ran well enough to beat a bad field or a weak field. And Safi was very happy with it. He didn't want her to have to do too much coming into this race next. So he's expecting a big forward move. And she has worked better coming into this race. Still maybe not quite as well as she had last fall. But she's not a great workhorse to begin with. So, but she's going to have to earn it in here. She's going to have to prove that she can go back to that kind of a number that she ran at the hut. Spices Knives, you know, could be this good. We'll see.
Yeah, and Cherie DeVoe with Baroness, who looks, you know.
Yeah, she's 2-for-2.
Nothing wrong
with
her.
Coming off a bit of a laugh. And Chart on the rail, also undefeated for Gary Contessa. She's going to be on the lead. You know, she, too, is going from a maiden race to a grade two, coming out of a 6-furlong race, though. At least Todd Spice's Nice won a mile first time. So, but I look for her to be in front. I'm not saying, maybe she can hold on and get a piece. I don't expect Chart to win, but I expect her to run well.
Well, we're going to get a text if I don't bring up Nikki and Papa.
Yeah, I bet you will. you know, she's back entered in a maiden race on Sunday, which I was encouraged to see that. And then Marty McGee called me this morning and said Bob Hess told him that even though she's in the maiden race, she's going to run in the Devona Dale. So I'm not shocked, obviously. You know, there was a lot of talk about her debut. Look, they paid $500,000 for her. She has shown promise in the morning. That race, you know, all the rave reviews in the race, I mean, after all, she got a 59 buyer. They went very slow. Somebody had to be third. I know she overcame a lot after the start, and she finished up okay. She came back with a not-so-great work on the 14th, and then a lot better work. She did look good out of the gate on the 21st. I give her a B-plus for that. But, you know, why not? Why not a maiden race? It's a long year, plenty of chances to go in graded company. So, but be it for me to to say anything. I didn't, you know, she got, they accomplished what they wanted to in the forward galley, got a great at stakes place at first asking, and it's no surprise to me that she's back in here, but, you know, I sure would have liked to seen her run on Sunday, winner maiden, and then there's plenty of graded races to come.
Well, all throughout the card, just a lot of interesting spots and plenty of opportunities. And,
Maiden races, too, you know, which you always want to see mixed in with these kind of things because, you know, there's still three-year-olds. There's still it's a little too late for these guys to get on the Derby trail, but you still like to look at these fresh three-year-old faces and see what you got coming.
Well, I'm looking forward to later this afternoon, typically about 4 o'clock, the Clocker Report with the work of Mike and Don Harris and Dave Norton. And that gives us a lot of insights on a deep, compelling card like this. Mike, thanks so much.
Okay, I just want to give a shout-out to my guys, too, both Donald and Dave. They're doing a great job this year. Caton was mentioning last night she thinks this is the best year for the report we've had so far. And I think I agree with her. We've had a lot of good stuff. So hopefully it'll continue on Saturday.
Well, as always, it's not just the ones that worked really well. You also get hints about horses that aren't coming in maybe to a spot as well as their previous. And so you help identify vulnerable favorites. I mean, there's a lot. There's so much in there. And it just gives you, you know, one more way to attack, basically to attack your plays. The Clocker Report later today and every day, every race day. Mike, good luck tomorrow.
Okay, Steve. Talk to you soon.
Mike Welch. We're going to stay right here because there's just too much to do. We'll go back to Florida and talk to Jay Privman in a little bit. But as promised, a rare Friday visit from Andy Serling. Good morning.
Morning. You know, I was eating breakfast. I was thinking I would just eat the whole time of your show because I know people like that.
They do. Race day after the cancellation yesterday, the high winds, and it was windy up here, and I imagine that I wasn't surprised when the word came, but back at it, and of course next week looking forward to the Gotham. But Andy, tomorrow the broadcast, and you guys are going to offer what, 3.5 hours of coverage in the afternoon.
We will be on from 3 to 6:30 Eastern time on FS2. If you want to watch the races in HD, and we'll be covering stakes races, I think, 9 through 14, those stakes from Gulfstream, as well as our last 5 races here at Aqueduct, but also, I think, races 4 through 9 at Oaklawn, and also the first leg of the cross-country Pick 5. Hopefully the first leg will actually go off before the second leg this week. It's like a special treat. That'll be coming to you from Tampa, race number 8. So I think we've got about 11, something like 18 races in 3.5 hours, all in HD.
Oh, my God. Holy cow.
Yep. It'll be Greg Wolf, Maggie Wolfendale, Richard Bigliori, and myself in New York. And I think Lafitte and Acacia down at Gulfstream. And Nancy Olf is, of course, at Oaklawn. I'm not sure, you know, how much we'll get, but hopefully some from her. Good stake down there. Break even's back, right?
Yes, she is. She bypassed the opportunity, which her stablemate ended up winning, the Mardi Gras on Tuesday, and the Kleins sending her and Brad Cox over to try to co-opt the Spring Fever.
Yeah, 5.5 on dirt. She should be pretty tough. But looking forward to the races from Gulfstream, you know, the Fountain of Youth and all those races. So should be a really fun show, actually. I mean, the stakes came up strong down there. In a lot of ways, I think this is, you know, their big card of the meet. Because with Florida Derby, and they run into the situation where so many people are waiting for Keeneland at that point that the stakes don't come up as strong as they do in this race in Fountain of Youth Day. And, I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, Gulfstream is in that same situation, I think, as Saratoga's in, where it's great to run, you know, differently and more, but the reality is, and this has always been true, the most popular part of the meet, as far as attendance and stuff, has always been the days in August. So if Labor Day is September 1st, you're busy that last week. This year it's September 7th, so it'll be quiet last week, but we'll get busy earlier. And I think Gulfstream, it still sort of follows the blueprint of the good old days, you know, when they used to run from like January 2nd or 3rd through the middle of March. And it always sort of quiets down, and a lot of it's because a lot of people are just heading back north and going to Keeneland or even coming here.
Agreed. And horses start to drift back north, and especially the way the weather seems to be headed, because I got a feeling turf is going to be early the way we're tracking.
You never know. I mean,
you don't know. You don't know.
It gets cold, and it really depends on March more than anything else. Remember, we had that one year, number of years ago, it was really warm in March and even April, and I believe March 31st actually was our first turf race, and that's the only time I've ever seen that in New York. But that was unusual, you know. I heard somebody talking the way on the subway that, despite what everybody believes, he said, "I think global warming might be true." I'm thinking everybody is a very select portion of the population. Anyhow, but yeah, looking forward to those races. I can't wait to see Dennis Bowman come back. I fail to understand why there's this sort of mass dislike of him. I don't understand it. I'm not saying he's going to win tomorrow. There are some major players that's seen on TV. Seems like a big-time player. But I don't understand what people are missing about him. His race at Ellis was legitimate. Obviously you cruise away from the field like that, but you look at the horses behind them, and that number is highly believable. And then in the middle of September, he makes a two-turn debut at a mile 16th and still runs a 91 buyer, and horses behind him have come back and confirmed that figure. So I don't really understand the criticism of him. He stumbled so badly to start the Breeders' Cup that he clearly just completely lost interest in the race. And to suggest, I hear these people saying, the Breeders' Cup is a bad race, therefore he stinks. It's sort of nonsensical. It's like create your own logic and follow that. And you're supposed to be logical when looking at horse racing and try to be reasonable. And like I said, I don't know that he has to win tomorrow, but to me, he's clearly the horse to beat. I mean, he's running races fast enough as a two-year-old to be a major, major player here. And in general, horses routinely improve. And he could easily end up as one of the major Derby favorites. He could also be a bust, but in all likelihood, he's more likely to be a major Derby player than he is to be a bust. I don't understand the bust thinking. It's not like Dale hasn't been there before.
No, and his confidence, has been unwavering. And granted, we make fun of Dale.
His confidence has been unwavering for 30 years.
But yes, but still.
He may actually have the goods here, I mean, unfortunately, not this time. The last super two-year-old he had got injured, but he had huge confidence in him, and he was right. I mean, he just lost to a horse, Classic Empire, ran one of the best Breeders' Cup juveniles we've ever seen. So I'm optimistic. I obviously, Dale and I are friends, and I hope he does well. But I'm optimistic because I think that he may be a good horse, and it's nice to root for good horses. So looking forward. There's some good races on the card. I mean, that Gulfstream Park Mile, Camp, a very interesting race. I thought True Timber had a real shot in there.
You're the third person, at least, that has identified True Timber, and he's 15-1. And
he's not gonna be 15-1, but
okay, yeah,
but. Yeah, it's a big field, so he could get lost a little bit. But he's a logical horse. I mean, I don't think there's anything clever about liking him. I noticed that Welsh and I like the same horse in the mile turf race, that horse that won the Commonwealth. He's the PP somewhere on my desk, and big mass of PPs. Let's see.
In the three-year-old, you mean? The three-year-old?
Yeah,
race?
Mr. Dumas. I also thought Sambaye was dangerous in there. I thought he ran very well last time, essentially in a mile race. We'll see. It's an interesting race. The Devona Dale, I'm looking forward to seeing Spice's Nice run because her debut really was good. We'll see if she comes back and runs as well, but she really did run well first time out. And I thought Reluctant Bride going the dirt for the first time for Patrick was interesting because this is really a dirt pedigree, much more so than a turf pedigree. And there's every reason to believe she can improve dramatically on the dirt. And we've seen Patrick do this before with runners, so the horse that won at Tampa Bay, the Sam Davis. So it's kind of a move that's worked for him in the past. I was interested in Veruca in the Here Comes the Bride. Thought that she had a chance to be an okay turf horse. I don't think her dirt race were very good, but her turf race was okay. So we'll see. I mean, I thought it's fun racing all around. So looking forward to those. And Aqueduct, of course. Always looking forward to Aqueduct. So
Well, and on that topic, let me ask you the two races that are part of the cross country, Andy, seventh. It's the seventh and the eighth, the Bernardini and then the State Bred Mile Allowance with Freaky Styley and Yankee Division.
Yeah, I thought the two horses there were Freaky Styley and Captain Frost. I don't think the horse in the outside is any. I don't like that horse at all. Yankee Division, well, his race was last time was on a souped up speed track, so I think that race is a complete phony, and if you take that race out, he's not even remotely competitive. He didn't interest me at all. I was more interested in Captain Frost and Freaky Styley. Freaky Styley made a lot of sense. Logical favorite. And Captain Frost, I don't think he'll be the 5-1. He is morning line, but, you know, he's a hard one because his last race may be kind of a joke, but Linda has a way of doing well with these kind of horses, moving up off a win, so we'll see. I thought he was a little interesting. And, you know, the Bernese is a super, super tough race. I'm not sure what to think in that race, Steve. My general feeling is I like Adventist. I'm not sure that Backside of the Moon doesn't have a chance. I'm not Leotone's biggest fan. He should be the controlling speed, but I don't know how the pace is going to be because I have a hard time seeing Sammy Camacho not being aggressive with armament. So I'm not really sure that Leotone's going to have such an easy time on the front end. So I was looking more for closer types, even Dynamax Prime's in good form. I assume Patagonia is coming out because he's entered in a race on Sunday. So, and that was where I would probably go in those races. I don't know if I haven't really looked at the others. I'm just was jotting down some notes in the other legs. The Cross Country Big Five is the 8th at Tampa, the 7th and 8th here, and I think the 6th and 7th at Oakland. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, should be fun. And we're also on FS1 from 12-1. People want to watch the Saudi Cup from 12-1. That'll be on. We'll end Talking Horses at 12:35, so people can watch if they want. But we got a lot of racing tomorrow. You excited?
I am. I am excited. I'm always excited. I also excited about Sunday. I got to twist Tina's arm to maybe come
down.
Well,
you won't come visit anyway, so it doesn't matter. So there's no reason. I don't really care what you do. Yeah, I mean, Tina's got to love making that 8-hour round trip to go see Carlisle Bell Run. I mean, what a bad wife she is if she's not going to do that.
I went and saw the baby.
Oh, when you're pretending to be a fake, like you're like a fake grandpa? You're pretending that you're a grandpa now? That's the most back-ended grandpa deal I've ever heard in my life.
All right, I did back-end.
It's a shameless
attempt.
Legitimate grandfathers should really not be happy with you.
I did sort of back into it.
To say the least.
But I'm still going to be on the hook for presents and for all the obligations. So why don't I get to?
I have the over on Tina's share of the cost on that.
That's not true. I've already gone to the well.
Okay, you've got more important guests on. Jay Fridman's going to be on. I don't want to keep Jay waiting while we talk about your grandchild. But thanks for having me on, and I hope people get a chance once again. 3 to 6:30. We'll be covering 6 stakes from Gulfstream, 5 from Aqueduct, 6 from Oaklawn, 1 from Tampa, me and the MIG, Maggie and Greg in New York, and also the Saudi Cup from 12-1. That's on FS1. We're on FS2, though, at 3 to 6:30. America's Day at the Races.
I'm
starting to learn the name of that show.
Well done.
I wouldn't have named it that. But.
Well, it all started with the Jockey Club Tour on Fox. That was the original, right?
Correct.
That was the original.
That's correct. That's very good. All right, we good?
We are terrific. Andy Serling, everybody, and the team between Fox Sports and the tracks participating in the cross country and then picking up the action from Gulfstream should be terrific. And for those that, you know, are in some of those awful states that won't let you bet, you can watch, you know, right
on
your TV.
That's the most ridiculous thing
I've ever heard. It is kind of.
Especially in today's world, right?
Exactly.
Where sports betting's everywhere.
Yep. Yep.
All right, I got important stuff to do here, Steve.
Go ahead. Make it happen.
Frivolity. It's been really a pleasure, though. It's a special Friday for me.
It is.
For the weekend.
No doubt. You're going to have the best weekend ever now.
Ever.
Ever.
The competition's not that steep. I'll talk to you later.
Andy Serling. Oh, I love it. Let's take a break. It'll be our last break of the morning and the first break in 2 hours. We've got Jay Pribman standing by, and I'm gonna pull up a picture of Dave Keon and see how alike they are. Jay is our Lady Bing winner. He joins us next, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRFSports.